Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Bob and Yart Live. I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church, and I've been invited this week up to Canada to speak on the evidence against the Big Bang. So we are airing something that we've never done before. We've reached into the video archives here at Bob and Yart Live and pulled out the trilogy, Focus on the Strategy. Today, we're airing the audio track of part two, and this is the video that is credited by many for helping to launch the modern personhood movement. So this is very significant, and I hope you enjoy it.
We've been 40 years in the wilderness. Prepare yourself to reevaluate your commitment to fighting abortion. This DVD brings you to Colorado Right to Life's historic event, marking to the very day the 40th anniversary of America's first permissive abortion law. In the same Supreme Court chambers in which Colorado's governor signed the first law allowing abortion in instances like rape and incest, the standing room only crowd saw Bob Inyart, pastor of Denver Bible Church, deliver a groundbreaking analysis of pro-life strategy. And leaders like Flip Benham of Operation Rescue were there to support this Colorado Right to Life strategy, as was Ambassador Alan Keyes, with his powerful remarks on the partial birth abortion ban, and Judy Brown of American Life League, supporting our one commitment.
40 years ago, the first U.S. law allowing abortion, Colorado Revised Statutes 18-6-101, justified the intentional ending of a pregnancy, killing the unborn child, if there's serious permanent impairment to the health of the mother or the baby, or if the pregnancy resulted from a crime the statute defines as rape or incest. So what's happened is the steps to destroying the personhood of a child are rape and incest. And then what happens is the personhood legal defense of that little baby crumbles because you can't kill a person for the crimes of someone else. So as soon as we accept this lie, that is what has led to the slaughter of children by the millions. Remember, half a century ago, after World War II, American judges and our allies put on trial German officials and judges. And those judges defended themselves, saying, "We were upholding the law." But our judges said that is not a defense when you're murdering the innocent. 50 years ago, even Hollywood understood that point.
If it means anything to you, you have the respect of at least one of the men you convicted. By all that is right in this world, your verdict was a just one.
Thank you. What you said in the courtroom, it needed to be said.
Judge Haywood, the reason I asked you to come was people, those millions of people. I never knew it would come to that. You must believe it. You must believe it.
Hey, Yana. It came to that the first time you sentenced a man to death you knew to be innocent.
When a judge rules to kill an innocent person, that is the beginning of a Holocaust, and we have ours. Abortion's milestones by political party, a group like this, we're very comfortable looking across the aisle and looking at what the other guys do wrong, but we should take the plank out of our own eye. You know, it was the Republican governor of Colorado, John Love, who signed the first permissive abortion law in America. And the man who wrote Roe v. Wade was Harry Blackmun, a Republican justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. That court, back in 1973, passed Roe v. Wade by a 7-2 decision, and those justices, five of the seven were Republican judges on the U.S. Supreme Court. In the current court, 2007, I have a question. How many of those justices have written or testified or ruled that the unborn child is a person who has a right to life? How many? The answer to that, tragically, not one. And we follow this closely. Partial birth abortion, many across the country are celebrating the ruling. We worked for 15 years. And you know what we did? Well, if it was a half a century ago and we were in Germany, let me make an analogy what we did. They were killing innocent people with Zyklon B, and we worked to outlaw Zyklon A. Because the tiniest fraction of children killed are killed by partial birth abortion. And we've celebrated the Gonzalez versus Carhart decision, but let me quote to you from that decision, section 4. Our justices wrote, "The act does not on its face impose a substantial obstacle to late-term abortion." They also wrote in section 3, part A, "This partial birth abortion ban requires the fetus to be delivered until any part of the fetal trunk past the navel is outside of the body of the mother." They go page after page after page saying you could pull out the baby, you could pull him out, his feet, his legs, his hips, up to his belly button, and then kill him, and that's fine. Just not past his belly button. This is what we celebrate as an answer to prayer. My. Respect for life. Section 3, C, part 1. The justices make it clear that of the living fetus, and in this section they say, their words, an arm or a leg, they say the removal of a small portion of the fetus is not prohibited. And in fact, they say that's pretty common. An abortionist will take a late-term baby and start to pull him out of the birth canal and rip off an arm, rip off a leg, and they say that's perfectly legal, just don't go past the navel. This was five Republican judges who passed this law. That was the majority, 5-4. And all five were nominated by Ronald Reagan or George Bush or George W. Bush. And this is what they wrote in Section 4, Part A. "The medical profession," by which they mean abortionists, "abortionists may find different and less shocking methods to abort the fetus in the second trimester." They're not affirming life. And here, they're happy that the ban doesn't say child. They pointed out. They said, "We struck down a ban that said child. This ban says fetus. We like that better." And they use the word life, but a tumor is a life. A bacteria is a life.
Why on earth am I called upon to rejoice in a decision that in every single line, in every single word, in every bit of logic in the whole decision, painfully shows its regard for a concept that violates the law of God, the law of man, constitutional law, and every sane concept of decency that anyone in this country can come up with?
It is difficult for us to convince Christians of the truth of this partial birth abortion ruling because the pro-life community constantly misinforms everyone.
Thank you for calling Focus on the Family. This is Becky. How may I help you?
Hi, Becky. My name is Will Duffy, and I'm just calling to get some more information on the partial birth abortion ban. My church supports it, but I've got some pro-life friends that don't.
And let me go ahead and put you through to correspondence, and I'll let them know what you're needing to address, sir.
Thank you.
You bet. One moment.
Hello, this is Susan in the correspondence department. How are you today, Mr. Duffy?
Hi, Susan. Doing well.
I understand that you wanted more information on the partial birth abortion ban.
Yeah. I noticed that James Dobson and Focus on the Family thought it was a pretty big victory. Do you know off the top of your head what this partial birth abortion ban is going to do?
It's going to, the Supreme Court made it illegal for women to have an abortion in the last trimester.
Okay. So that'd be the 7th, 8th, and 9th month?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you've been very helpful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
ProLifeNews.tv and NationalProLifeRadio.net. And Reverend Rob Schenck from the Faith in Action is here.
Well, it's a great day, Peter. For the first time, really, since 1973, we've seen the court make a definitive statement about the sanctity of human life. Unfortunately, in 1973, it was all downhill from there, because what they were saying was there are only certain human lives that have any value in our society. Now, Justice Kennedy, of all people, not the one that we normally think of as squarely on the side of life, has said that the state, meaning the government, has an interest in preserving the life of a child from the moment of conception. So this is a very, very big victory for the sanctity of human life.
They're encouraging the abortionists to find better ways to kill late-term babies that don't look so bad. That's a victory. Pro-life Republican judicial heroes, brace yourself. You've probably lobbied for some of these people to break the Democratic filibuster. For example, Priscilla Owen, Texas Supreme Court Justice, George Bush nominated her for the federal court. The pro-lifers across the country lobbied, even though, as a Supreme Court Justice in Texas, a mother came to her wanting to kill her unborn child, and the mother needed a judicial bypass. This is baby 10. And Priscilla Owen, she's pro-life. She looked at the paperwork and she said, you know what? A lower court judge missed the deadline for filing this paperwork. So Priscilla Owen voted to kill baby 10. Priscilla Owen, one of our heroes, on a paperwork problem. William Pryor, we, the pro-life community, lobbied to get him on the federal judiciary. Well, that's down in Florida. What's that, the 11th Circuit? Terry Schiavo's case came to the 11th Circuit, and all six judges, after we have worked for a quarter of a century to elect presidents who will give us a culture of life, all six of our judges, all six who were nominated to the federal bench by Republican presidents, Ronald Reagan, George Bush, and George W. Bush, all six of our judges voted to kill Terry Schiavo. All six. 60% of the federal judiciary, 60%, about 100 judges, have been nominated by Republican presidents. The federal judiciary is solidly pro-abortion. I am not saying don't vote Republican. I couldn't care less what party you vote for, but don't be lied to. Don't be deceived. Find out, like Mary Rita Erbisch said, find out what is right and then do what is right. I'll give you just three of Samuel Alito's aggressively pro-abortion decisions. In 1995, Blackwell versus Knoll, he voted for tax-funded abortion if the woman claims rape, even if she doesn't file a police report that a crime was committed. And that's not just pro-choice. A lot of pro-choice people don't want the government to pay for abortion. That's extremist pro-abortion. In 1997, Alexander versus Whitman, Samuel Alito, as a federal justice, could find no legal protection for an unborn child, not even for medical malpractice. In the year 2000, he voted to keep legal partial birth abortion. We're going to look at why he did that. And we have many leaders who say, well, that was a good thing he did because he was following the law. But a half a century ago, even Hollywood knew that if a judge kills an innocent person and he says, I was just following the law, the judge is guilty of murder. That's where we've fallen from. Focus on the strategy one in Colorado Springs. We warned our Christian leaders of legal positivism. Legal positivism, that's moral relativism in the government. So the elders of Denver Bible Church went down and spoke to VP Tom Minery and his legal staff. By the way, that presentation has been endorsed by Judy Brown of American Life League, who's speaking this evening, and Flip Benham. And what we did was warn them over and over and over of the dangers of legal positivism. That was 2 years ago. We were thrilled that this last year, Focus on the Family in 2006, produced a video, The Truth Project, that's going out literally to hundreds of thousands of people, and it's fabulous. And it warns of the deadly dangers of moral relativism. And in this presentation done by Dr. Del Tackett on staff at Focus, he warns about legal positivism, and I'd like you to hear what he says, that legal positivism is when the truth, legal truth, is based on a decision of the state. So if the state says you could kill children, then all the officials and all the lower judges say, well, it's my job, you could kill children. Let's hear Del Tackett.
And we come then to what is called legal positivism. How is that defined? The claim that the state is the ultimate authority for creating, interpreting, and enforcing law. All legal truth is based on the decision of the state. And all law is based upon what? An ethical notion. The state now is in the position of determining what is right and what is wrong.
Gary Bauer ran for president with the encouragement of a lot of us, pro-life, conservative, Christian, longtime associate of Focus on the Family. And he wrote about Samuel Alito's ruling in 2000, where Alito kept partial birth abortion legal. And he was responding to Colorado Right to Life Vice President Leslie Hanks, who's right here. He wrote on November 8th, 2005, on the 2000 partial birth case, Alito wrote a separate concurring opinion that simply cited Stenberg as binding precedent. As a judge committed to judicial restraint, that's exactly what he should do. The most evil rulings in the history of America, and our Christian pro-life leaders affirm them and defend them as good because they're following the process. That's what the Nazi judges said when we found them guilty of murder. How far we have fallen. Moral relativism is legal positivism in government. These isms are humanism. Man gets to decide who you can murder. Such isms cannot be controlled. You tell millions of conservatives that do not murder is not binding, and then what are they going to do the next 20 or 30 years? Relativism destroys the morality of the church. So we have divorce epidemic and pornography flooding our Christian homes. And abortion from the daughters of pastors. Dr. James Dobson wrote also to us about Alito's ruling on partial birth abortion. This is moral relativism, legal positivism, at the highest level of American Christian pro-life ministry. Dr. Dobson wrote a letter. He signed it. He penned a note at the bottom. And it was to one of our listeners, Gary, who works in the federal justice system. And Dr. Dobson was writing about the concerns at our website, kgov.com, where we air our radio show, Bob Benyart Live. And he said, kgov.com questions my support for Justice Samuel Alito. And then Dr. Dobson, a man that I love and respect and pray for, Dr. Dobson explained why he has defended Alito's ruling. And he said, a closer look at the cases cited by kgov.com reveals that Justice Alito recognized that appellate court judges are bound by Supreme Court precedent under the long-established principle of stare decisis. That's not true. No man in the history of the world has been bound to murder an innocent person because it was his job. That's not true. And you know what? They say we are a nation of laws. But when that nation violates do not murder, we are a lawless nation.
Our government has been in rebellion against the law of Almighty God since January 22nd, 1973, and here in the state of Colorado since April 25th, 1967. The Supreme Court of the United States of America declared that children in their mother's wombs were not fully human and therefore were not entitled to the full protection of the laws of our land.
Rudy Giuliani, the leading Republican candidate for president right now, I call him the popular partial birth abortion candidate because he's advocated even that for all these years. Homosexual marriage, pro-choice, even partial birth abortion. You think of conservatives, religious conservatives on the air, and how they fawn over Rudy Giuliani, and how they want to endorse them, and they almost do, and then they remember there's a lot of pro-lifers in my audience, so they back off a bit. But which of our national pro-life conservatives in the media would oppose Rudy Giuliani if he got the party's nomination? Bill Bennett the other morning basically said the greatest good a Christian could do is if he's willing to set aside his single issue and support Rudy Giuliani. That's Bill Bennett. Michael Medved a week ago said, I haven't endorsed Rudy Giuliani yet. Hugh Hewitt, I interviewed him on the floor of the Republican National Convention in New York City. You can hear the whole interview on the website, but here's the very end of the interview when I asked him, Hugh, what if Rudy was the party's nominee? Would you support him?
All right, Hugh Hewitt, last question. Would you support Rudy Giuliani if he were the party's nominee?
Yes.
We have erased the moral difference between the parties at this point because we violated do not murder, and now where will we not compromise if we violate that? Rush Limbaugh is going to oppose Rudy? Is that where it's going to happen? Pat Robertson said to ABC News, they asked him, and he said, Rudy Giuliani is a good friend and he'd make a good president. Steve Forbes ran the strongest anti-abortion ads of a presidential candidate I ever saw in my life a few years back. You know what he's doing today? He's on the campaign committee for Rudy Giuliani for president. Multiply those people 100 times over. Laura Ingraham is, I think, the most angry as a conservative, religious, pro-lifer in the media nationwide about Rudy. I'd like to let you hear a bit of a discussion she had with the publisher of the Weekly Standard, Bill Kristol. You could hear the whole thing on the internet.
And I'm very concerned that the Giuliani juggernaut that we're seeing right now is going to, in some way, leave behind the social conservatives.
Bill Kristol responded.
If you could add New Jersey, let's say, as Giuliani might, to the mix of states that Republicans can carry.
That's the way the conversation went, sort of political considerations. And I'm not saying Laura said, okay, I'm going to support him, but maybe 1,000 people in her audience that day said, you know what, Rudy's not too bad, and he could help us win another election. So this is how it ended.
Well, you made me feel better. Bill Kristol.
Yeah, I do my best. This is my role in life.
It made me feel sick. Brian Rohrbaugh, the president of Colorado Right to Life, was on probably the most popular pro-life TV show. It goes out to Christian leaders around the country. Life Talk, published by Life Dynamics out of Denton, Texas, with host Mark Crutcher. Listen to Brian Rohrbaugh clearly state the position that we are urging each one of you to adopt today.
I was elected as the president of Colorado Right to Life, and our position as a board is that we will never support any law that ends with, and then you can kill the baby. Now,
right.
That includes every type of law that would regulate abortion. So anything that allows for the abortion after you meet these certain conditions is inherently evil. It goes against God's command of thou shalt not murder.
Absolutely. You can't kill the baby if you pull him out past the navel, but if you pull him out right to the umbilical cord, then you could rip his legs off and kill him. That's what our Christian pro-life leaders celebrated as God's answer and the proof that the high court is moving toward life. Legal positivist pro-lifers ignore the harm that they're doing. And I'd like to give you one example from 1,000 we could give you. From a debate on National Right to Life's Fetal Pain Act, last year they introduced a bill to warn mothers that their unborn child would feel pain if you kill the baby in the womb. That is absolutely the right thing to say because that affirms the personhood of the child. The child is a person. That child could feel pain. But then they went on. Their act said then the abortionist must be required to offer painkiller to the baby. And so they pointed out a horrendous problem, and then they said, and here's the solution, the baby could be given a painkiller. Well, we broadcast a debate on this on Bob and Yurt Live at our website, kgov.com, between Brian Rohrbaugh. By the way, that picture comes from CBS Evening News when Katie Couric invited him to speak about school violence, and he, for 90 seconds, gave the clearest, strongest statement I have ever seen on national news about why abortion is wrong, it is murder, and it leads to a culture of death and violence.
Brian Rohrbaugh lost his son Dan in the Columbine massacre, and we asked him to share his thoughts.
I'm saddened and shaken by the shooting at an Amish school today and last week's school murders. When my son Dan was murdered on the sidewalk at Columbine High School on April 20th, 1999, I hoped that would be the last school shooting. Since that day, I tried to answer the question, why did this happen? This country is in a moral freefall. For over two generations, a public school system is taught in a moral vacuum, expelling God from the school and from the government, replacing him with evolution, where the strong kill the weak without moral consequences. And life has no inherent value. We teach there are no absolutes, no right or wrong. And I assure you, the murder of innocent children is always wrong, including by abortion. Abortion has diminished the value of children. Suicide has become an acceptable action and has further emboldened these criminals. And we are seeing an epidemic increase in murder-suicide attacks on our children. Sadly, our schools are not safe. In fact, we now witness that within our schools, our children have become a target of terrorists from within the United States.
And I'm only using Steve Urtel as an example. He's the publisher of LifeNews.com. He's the president of Wyoming Right to Life. Listen to the debate.
I'd like to ask Brian Rohrbaugh. Brian?
Yes.
And then I'm going to ask the opposite question to Stephen. Stephen said this bill might convince a woman to not kill her baby because she realizes the baby can feel pain. Is that possible?
Well, I think sure it's possible.
Okay, I'd like to ask Stephen Urtel the opposite of that question, the reciprocal part of it. Stephen, is it possible that some women who would not want to kill their unborn child late in pregnancy, that this bill might encourage them to go ahead and kill the baby because they've been notified that the baby will not feel pain and they'll receive a pain medication for the baby? Is that possible?
I don't think it's possible at all.
Stephen, is it possible that this bill will convince some women late in pregnancy to have an abortion because their baby will be medicated?
This bill will not convince any woman to have an abortion.
Is it possible that it could convince millions of people that late-term abortion is not so inhumane or evil because the babies are given pain medication?
No, it's not possible, Bob.
When you refuse to look at the downside of some very dangerous ideas, you are not being objective, and there's millions of lives of innocent children at stake. And I have yet, after 15 years of doing this, have had someone on the other side, a pro-life leader, be willing to admit, yeah, there is some downside when we pass laws that say, and then you could kill the baby. South Dakota's tragic loss. President George W. Bush has been reported as withholding his support. I'll show you a quote from him. He was interviewed on this by ABC News, and the AFP reported worldwide, President George W. Bush indicated he is opposed to South Dakota's abortion ban. This ban would have saved all the children in South Dakota. And why did the president oppose it? He told ABC News that my position has always been three exceptions: rape, incest, and the life of the mother. That was the position in this room 40 years ago today that started the killing of children by the millions. Pro-lifers have destroyed personhood. Who has spent millions of dollars running campaign ads saying we are against abortion except for rape and incest? Have the Democrats run those ads? Have NARAL and NOW run those ads? Planned Parenthood? Pro-choicers? No. Pro-life Christian conservatives have spent tens of millions of dollars educating the people of South Dakota and America and the world that a child could be killed if his father's a criminal. That destroys the personhood of the child. South Dakota was an example of pro-life ministries that are now confused. They made a TV ad in the last weeks of the election because the polls weren't looking that good, and they actually made the pro-lifers made a pro-abortion TV commercial advocating the morning after pill, Plan B, as a good choice for women who have been raped. This is a pro-abortion ad run statewide. One of the directors of Vote Yes for Life produced this ad. His name is on the ad at the end. You'll see it as the treasurer. We got it off their official website for the campaign.
Before you vote on Referred Law 6, please get the facts. Referred Law 6 does not change the fact that women can still use the morning after pill. Victims of rape and incest can still access the best options for medical care, compassion, and justice. And this can include the morning after pill. But Referred Law 6 ends abortion as birth control. The fact is, rape doesn't have to end in pregnancy. Women have options in Referred Law 6. Vote yes on 6.
Moral relativism cannot be controlled. We don't know what we're doing any longer, but we're very quick to pat ourselves on the back. Informed consent. I'll give you one example of hundreds of laws around the country that pro-lifers have passed that end with the meaning of, and then you could kill the baby. Indiana Code, Title 16, Section 34, Chapter 2. An abortion shall be criminal except when the woman files her consent. When she signs a piece of paper, then the abortion is legal. So when Roe v. Wade is overturned eventually, then the abortion decision goes back to the states. And this is the law that will be the controlling legal authority in Indiana. And so abortion will continue after Roe v. Wade is overturned by the pro-life law that says abortion is criminal unless the woman signs a piece of paper, then it's legal. This law ends with the meaning, and then you could kill the baby. Now, pro-lifers don't like to admit that. They say it's not true. Planned Parenthood says they're not killing kids. Around the nation, 100 times over, these kinds of laws. We've been 40 years in the wilderness trying to overturn abortion law. How long will it take us? A century? To overturn our own pro-life laws. How many millions will die because of our compromised incrementalism? If you could only save one of 1,000, save one. But don't say, I'll let you kill these if you let me save this one. Because then you are violating do not murder. And it will backfire every time people do wrong. Dr. Charles Rice, constitutional law expert, law professor at Notre Dame, he's been speaking out explaining that our pro-life laws have destroyed the personhood defense of the child. Our own pro-life laws will keep abortion legal when Roe v. Wade is overturned. If you think, I don't know what I'm talking about because I'm not a lawyer, listen to Dr. Charles Rice.
Let's assume for a moment that Roe versus Wade was overturned. Your argument is that some of these regulatory pieces of legislation could actually backfire on the pro-life movement and make it harder for us to then pass laws that protect the unborn. Is that correct?
The basic holding of Roe versus Wade is that whether or not the unborn child is a human being, he is a non-person.
Right.
And therefore has no rights under the Constitution. The court said that if the child is a person, then the case for abortion collapses. And that was their word, collapses.
Right.
And their position is that whether or not he's a human being, he's a non-person, which is the same, in effect, as a holding that an acknowledged human being is a non-person, which is exactly what the Nazis did to the Jews and what the
right.
Dred Scott case did to the slaves and so on. So the pro-life movement, the National Right to Life Committee and other people made a tragic error in shifting the focus back in the 1970s, and especially in 80 and 81, toward seeking a states' rights solution or the exceptions, actually promoting exceptions and so on. What you're saying is that an innocent human being can be legally executed whenever a legislature so decides or whenever another individual so decides, and that makes that innocent human being a non-person.
John Archibald, could I ask you to stand one moment? John, you were a founding board member along with Mary Rita and Charles Onofrio of Colorado Right to Life. You were fighting since 1967. You were also a founding board member of National Right to Life and Americans United for Life. Could you tell us if Charles Rice was right in what he just said?
Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. And because these two venerable organizations, National Right to Life and Americans United for Life, on whose boards I served, because they adopted this so-called incremental strategy, which was not only immoral, but strategically wrong, I resigned from both of them.
Charles, if you want to interrupt, just come up here and let me know. Roe v. Wade, you could read it in the decision. If personhood is established, the case for abortion collapses, for the fetus' right to life would then be guaranteed. Harry Blackmun understood the truth better than our pro-life leaders today. And he's the author of Roe v. Wade. Hundreds of pro-life laws. John Archibald just mentioned Americans United for Life. They are the legal pilot of the pro-life movement, advocating all these laws that end with, and then you could kill the baby. We have passed hundreds of these laws. Now we need to repeal them whenever Roe v. Wade is overturned. These laws are AUL approved. These maps I'll show you, the darker colors typically are worse. States where if you wait 24 hours, then you could kill the baby. So when Roe v. Wade is overturned, well, if you wait 24 hours, you could kill the baby. In states where minors need parental authority, in states where if you give informed consent, you can kill the baby. So Roe v. Wade eventually is overturned. The pro-life leaders think that's it. That's it. Then we won. Now, you know what happens then? Then we go through this quagmire. Look at the nightmare we have created for ourselves of a network of hundreds of pro-life laws that we have to go to the media, the politicians, the judges, and the public and say, our laws were evil. Please help us repeal them. And they will mock us. And they will say, abortion's not extreme. This is your own design.
Never give up the battle. Never compromise.
Amen.
Never for 1 minute agree that there's even one innocent human being whose life is expendable.
The number of annual abortions and the rate of abortions as a percent of pregnancies have declined for many reasons unrelated to the regulation of child killing. Compared to 15 years ago, pregnancy itself is way down. And one reason is that out of all annual sexual encounters, today, many millions more than in the past are lesbian encounters, all of which is immoral, but which has also reduced pregnancies, which in turn reduces abortion numbers. The stigma for unwed pregnancy has greatly faded, which can reduce the abortion rate. Also, economic growth has reduced the perceived need to abort and thus lowers the abortion rate. Crisis pregnancy centers have become more effective as has ultrasound technology and sidewalk counselors, all of which reduce the abortion rate. And the pregnancy rate itself is falling. Among teens, for example, it has plummeted over 30% during these years, and that reduces the number of abortions. Our movement, unethically playing with statistics, claims all this result as the good fruit of child-killing regulations. We prune the abortion weed and strengthen its root. We make abortion look better to politicians by requiring waiting periods. And so they believe that the decision to kill a fetus is not impulsive or rash. We make abortion look better to judges by requiring parental involvement, because now the law requires teenagers and parents to communicate regarding a crisis pregnancy. We make abortion look better to millions of Americans by requiring informed consent, and so they can trust the woman, who is now even more well-informed, to make her own choice. When you compromise on Do Not Murder, the results always backfire, and abortion easily becomes more entrenched. It was Jason Troyer, a board member of Colorado Right to Life, who said it correctly. Child-killing regulations just prune the abortion weed and strengthen its root. The argument for personhood is simple. Even a young one can master it. And upholding the personhood of the fetus is the only actual safeguard for the unborn. Yet what have we done? We have fought for 15 years for a partial birth abortion ban that never had even the possibility by law of saving a single child. And if we fight on personhood and win, then innocent life is protected. And the Born Alive Infants Protection Act is unnecessary, as is the Unborn Victims of Violence Act. And winning on personhood, from fertilization until natural death, is the only possible victory against chemical abortifacients like RU46 and Plan B, the morning after pill. Pro-lifers have spent a million hours explaining why they support rape and incest exceptions in their laws and candidates, decimating the personhood argument. And we fought for laws based upon trimesters and viability. And just wait 24 hours and then you can kill the baby. Or get dad's okay and then kill the baby. Or just notify your mom and kill your baby. Or we explain why we want clinic regulations and they kill children in better environments. And the babies feel pain, so National Right to Life wants to mandate anesthetic to solve the problem. And perhaps the most devastating of them all, even its name drips with wickedness, informed consent, which makes the sin all the more grievous. Informed consent, as with so many other of our regulations, these laws will be the nails that keep open the clinic doors after Roe v. Wade is overturned, when tragically, state law will determine whether you can kill your son or daughter. Recommendations? What you can do. Learn to see legal positivism. Pray for our leaders to do what they know is right. They should all recast their strategy to this pledge given so many years ago.
Finally, I want to give a pledge to you on a political level, and I'm speaking for myself, not Focus on the Family, which is a non-political organization. I can just tell you that I have determined that for the rest of my life, however long God lets me live on this earth, I will never cast one vote for any man or woman who would kill one innocent baby.
Amen, Dr. Dobson. Amen. What you can do? Have you noticed I haven't mentioned God not one time in this presentation? Not once? And that was on purpose. Because we have noticed for many years that when you go to pro-life leaders and activists and you say we need to honor God, they roll their eyes and they dismiss you as foolish and naive. But if you bring to them a political insight, like, you know why the partial birth abortion seems so terrible? Because it was written by Anthony Kennedy, and he's the weakest of the justices, and you need the weakest judge to write the opinion, otherwise the majority will fall apart. And they say, oh, really? Wow, let's go to Starbucks and talk about that. God says, do not kill the innocent. The Bible says it is slander to say that we should do evil that good may come of it. Yet that has become the pro-life slogan. The Bible says we must obey God rather than man. So three things to do. Fight against murder. You know, it's the pro-aborts on their websites that are arguing for judicial restraint and original intent. It's the pro-aborts that have adopted those words. We should show our pro-life leaders what they need to do, have the courage to call for judges who fear God and will protect the innocent. We need to focus on the strategy. Don't get deceived, pulled in because I just want to do something. Do what's right. Oppose any legal positivist ruling or campaign that violates the standard Dr. Dobson rightly proclaimed. Never support any law that ends with, and then you could kill the baby. And lastly, the 40 years pledge on the back table, on the internet. You could go to coloradorighttolife.org and you could read, consider, and then sign their pledge. Their 40 years, 50 million dead, one commitment to never compromise on God's enduring command, do not murder. Thank you all. Abortion clinics all across America continue the killing of children unabated. We are here in Birmingham, Alabama, at the All Women's Center. Really, how are we going to stop the killing? There are two ways. First, the pro-life movement must continue to cause unrest, the kind of social tension that moves governments to change direction. And secondly, we must educate our leaders, our judges, and the public regarding the personhood and the God-given right to life of the unborn.
Did you look into his eyes tonight? Did you hold my orphan child tight? Was he beautiful through all the pain, despite the shame?
So, hey, this is Bob Enyart again. There you have it. The goal is to protect every child without exception by love and by law. That was part two of our trilogy, Focus on the Strategy. Part three, The Conclusion, airs tomorrow, the audio track. We can't wait for that. And until then, this is Bob Enyart for KGov.com. May God bless you.